Okay, this is Mae Brussel, and I'm spending the entire hour this evening on a book review called, the book is called Best Evidence by David Lifton, published by Macmillan, came out just December of this year, January 1980. It came out the end of the last year, just before the first of the year. As I said in the beginning, for those of you that might have missed it, I've known David 15 years. He's a scientist. He was always very exact. He had a lot of information. He even has a computer to put his work together. And something very different happened to David Lifton between the time that he got out his first book, The Document Addendum to the Warren Report, fully aware of the hanky-panky, the conniving, the traitorous Warren Commission, as against the man now who has the bestseller with Macmillan and has taken a turnabout, complete turnabout, about the Kennedy assassination and has come up with a book, 700 pages of total confusion. If any of you who do research on the Kennedy assassination read this book and want to discuss it with me, I would be glad to do it. I would like to know, after you read it, what you learned from it and what you believe about it. And you might play this tape back, those of you who have the tape and those of you who are reading the book. What is there about the book that you like? And what can you believe and how does it contribute to the wealth of assassination material so far? I was asked those questions, as I said, and I had to come up with the conclusion that it contributed absolutely nothing. It was a lot of disinformation mixed with information that had no value. I do know that Lee Harvey Oswald was a scapegoat. I do know that the Warren Commission wrote all shots came from behind John Kennedy. There's evidence that they came from the front, from the grassy knoll. There are photographs of suspects known as the tramp pictures of them being taken away. There were puffs of smoke and evidence that a gun was fired at the grassy knoll. And there's a lot of evidence to support the fact that a gunman, a lone gunman from the book depository, was not the person that shot President John Kennedy, that there was a crossfire, and one area of shots came from the grassy knoll, and the other possibly was silencers from atop the book depository, the fifth floor or the roof or over at the Dow Tech's building. He doesn't address himself to any of those questions at all. He simply sticks with the autopsy report, and he has a burning desire in this book. It's a compulsion, first of all, to work with Wellesley Liebler. Liebler, and I'll do more about him in a few minutes, was on the staff, legal staff, of the Warren Commission. And he was a dangerous man. He was a man I particularly knew from my research because I was studying the Oswald conspiracy, the links of Lee Harvey Oswald to the white Russian community, to the Galen agents. That man was the head of Hitler's Eastern Division of the Nazi organization, Reinhard Galen. And he brought people into the Dallas-Fort Worth area with Alan Dulles of the CIA, who were friends and worked with Lee and Marina Oswald. Now, in that area, Wellesley Liebler was the counsel who took the testimony of Samuel Ballin. Liebler alone, with no member of the commission present, took the testimony of George Bowie, one of the most important witnesses before the committee. Liebler worked alone with Max Clark and did not call his wife Gally Clark. They were two of the most important keys to the conspiracy to killing John Kennedy. They didn't call Paul Dimitrich to testify. He interviewed and assisted with the testimony of Declan Ford and Catherine Ford, two of the Galen agents, important witnesses in the spy espionage part of Lee and Marina Oswald and their Russian connections to and Navy intelligence. He took the testimony of Paul Gregory, with nobody present from the Warren Commission, and Peter Paul Gregory, his son, Earl Warren and Gerald Ford were present, and two other people. He took the testimony of Elena Hall and John Hall, and a very important witness, Frank Kristenick. He took his testimony with Albert Jenner. Kristenick worked for Bell Helicopter, and he was the first person to make the connection of Lee Harvey Oswald to the assassination and was calling the authorities. He took his testimony and that of Anna Miller. Anna Miller's name was in Marina Oswald's book, notebook in the Soviet Union before she ever came to the United States, and she was the woman in the Dallas-Fort Worth area who defended her with other Tsarist Russians, such as Gally Clark, who belonged to the Sherbatov family, and the entourage of the White Russian community in the Dallas-Fort Worth area that George Bowie brought in as part of the Greek Orthodox Church, the Solidaris, the CIA organization, the Tolstoy Foundation, all CIA foundations, and Liebler took part of the testimony of Michael Payne, a very important person who worked at Bell Helicopter for Walter Dornberger, the Nazi war criminal who came over with NASA, the same agency that was hired David Lifton at the time that he was doing his research. So Liebler was a dangerous person, and he wasn't interested in the autopsy of John Kennedy. That wasn't his area. That was Arlen Specter's area, and he's now a senator from Philadelphia. So Lifton, when Liebler came out to UCLA to teach law, to get his law students to be brainwashed to support the Warren Commission, David Lifton attached himself to Liebler, and I've never known such an emotional bond. I knew he had it, and he would refer to Liebler all of the time, and we would talk. And I've never known such an emotional bond between two people, and in this book, it comes out over and over again. The index pages of Liebler in two sections of the index hardly cover. His name is used maybe 55 times on two pages. And it reminds me of David Lifton's obsession with Liebler. The relationship of Liebler to David Lifton is very much like Whitaker Chambers and Alger Hiss. Meyer Zelig wrote the book Friendship and Fratricide, and he tried to put a homosexual link of Whitaker Chambers to Alger Hiss, even though both men were married and had children and families, that it was an emotional tie, and the fault with that book that Zelig wrote, he was a psychiatrist, was that he missed the entire espionage part, the part of Whitaker Chambers working for Henry Luce in Time magazine, the same Henry Luce that had the Abraham Zapruder films that rearranged the frames and had them locked up of the Kennedy assassination. And Whitaker Chambers had contacts with Germans, with a man from Russia called the Chinaman. It was also the name of George de Morinchil. They used to call him the Chinaman. It could have been and might be the same man. Alger Hiss was a person exposing in 1933 the rearming of Germany. He brought the book The Merchants of Death to the Nye Committee in Congress, and he was putting the DuPonts and Mellons on the carpet for arming Germany and Adolf Hitler in the 30s. Meyer Zelig missed the espionage relationship of Whitaker Chambers to later bringing down Alger Hiss. And in the entire relationship of David Lifton to Liebler, it was like a cat and mouse, pawning, playing, fighting. And this book is consumed with references to Wesley Liebler. And if you don't know Lifton and don't know the circumstances, you'd think for the first 200 pages that he's addressing his desperation to prove a point simply to make Liebler, who was on the Warren Commission staff, sit back and say, yes, David, you've cracked the shell of the Kennedy conspiracy. He thinks because he found an FBI report by two agents in 1966 that he really found the clue of the surgical altering of the president's head. He calls that the Rosetta Stone of the conspiracy research. I have a very close friend who called it Lifton's pet rock, and I used that in the review, and I think it's very good. He gets obsessed with trying to make Liebler acknowledge that he has found more than the commission, and he harangues away at Liebler page after page until finally Liebler goes back east and sees John J. McCloy of the CIA and the Warren Commission and Gerald Ford and the upper bonds, and he comes home cold turkey and cuts Lifton off and just severs the contact with him, and then Lifton's out on his own. So after a few couple hundred pages in the book, he is weaned from the Liebler obsession and then gets on to a lot of information and witnesses that I think they supplied to him to misdirect him or lead him in the wrong direction. Something happened funny to Lifton, and I think a lot of it was his pursuit of Liebler and then people coming forward and giving lift and disinformation and confusing information and names of people in the military who were at the autopsy that the Warren Commission wouldn't use, the House Select Committee on Assassinations wouldn't use, but they would give it to Lifton and give it to a publisher for the purpose that they could say, look, we've had too many books on the assassination or this one sold, but even if it's sold, you won't know any more after you plunk down your $16.95. It's like the game, pin the tail on the donkey. You have the ass at one end that I refer to often, and you hold the tail in your hand, and somebody blindfolds you. And if somebody has good intentions and spins you around, even blindfolded, you may make a contact. But if they don't want you to get there, they can head you altogether in a different direction, and that's where you're going to go. And something happened to Lifton between Los Angeles and New York and McMillan that really isn't consistent, as I said, with the Lifton that I knew that was working in Los Angeles. Now, in addition to his psychological attachment to Liebler, he had another purpose. He had a three-part purpose in this book that comes out loud and clear. One, the emotional desire to prove to Liebler that he, too, could figure out what happened. Secondly, was a desire and necessity to put down the researchers, he refers to them as the critics, that the critics were wrong here, the critics were wrong there, the critics were misdirected, the critics didn't know about the altering of the body, the critics didn't know that when the autopsy report was given that the Warren Commission was right, that Earl Warren was right, that nobody lied. He says it would have been easier for me to accept they lied than that ghoulish idea that they rearranged the body. Well, this is just hogwash. And if you're analytical and if you're honest and if you read the book honestly, you will see that it is a miserable book in terms of truth or how the critics were misdirected. They weren't, and we weren't misdirected at all. Lifton has sold out. In his book, he says, among my peers in 1966, there was a radical notion. The first generation of Warren Report critics, that's me, starting day one, not only believed the Warren Report was wrong, but that the commission's legal staff had perpetuated a deliberate cover-up. What I saw in Wellesley Liebler's class at UCLA made me understand that no cover-up was necessary. And then the logic is that he attends a class at UCLA, a series where Liebler is teaching these students about who killed John Kennedy, and the students are following it hook, line, and sinker, and therefore something is wrong in the rational process of coming to these conclusions that there was no hanky-panky and that Liebler is telling it and the students are following up. What he doesn't say is that every lawyer from the Warren Commission, including Liebler, was from the Central Intelligence Agency. And what he doesn't say is that Liebler takes the evidence to support the questions he's giving them to make the hypothesis appear true, and therefore the students come to the same conclusions he did. He didn't teach the class by opening up the 26 volumes and the critical work of Joe Joestin, who wrote Oswald, Assassin, or Fall Guy, or Paris Flamon's Kennedy Conspiracy, or Mark Lane's Rush to Judgment, or Savage's Who Killed Kennedy, Thomas Buchanan's Who Killed Kennedy, and Savage's book on the Kennedy Conspiracy. The early researchers that were hitting it right on the head and making major contributions, they said the Warren Report was wrong, and it was. The legal staff had perpetuated a deliberate cover-up. This can be proven. And Lifton has this need to protect the Warren Commission staff and the Warren Commission. And he has the need for the approval of Liebler, and he has the need to believe that the critics were simply misled, that we had a wrong idea about the Kennedy autopsy. And he gets into the childish assumption in this book that one piece of paper, an FBI report by James Siebert and Francis O'Neill, one FBI report written in Epstein's book, Inquest, and also in the Oswald, The Doubles by Popkin, that this report is what misdirected me, them, and caused this bunch of books, over 250, critical of the Warren Commission. Now, Lifton can't truly believe that this FBI report diverted all of us. I mean, he must know, and as I say, the road from here to there and to making a buck, I don't know how many routes a person has to take, but somewhere, some way along the line, he sold out to everything he knew he actually knew. Now, as I say in this book, he can't locate where or how or when the second autopsy took place. Who did it? He denies any person had any responsible doing it. We don't have robots doing autopsies yet. I saw 60 Minutes, these mice taking care of a paraplegic, but they're not doing autopsies and writing reports yet. And I furthermore don't believe that with all the evidence they had to make Lee Harvey Oswald a patsy, the plans to use his name in Chicago, where Kennedy was supposed to be killed the 1st of November, or in Miami or wherever, there were so many Oswald doubles and planted evidence and forged documents. The very last thing you had to do was to alter the corpse of the President of the United States. Now, and finally, the title of the book is called Best Evidence. And he writes on page 132 in Law, best evidence concept impressed on all law students is that when you want to determine a fact, seek a fact from conflicting data, you must arrange the data according to the hierarchy of reliability. In this case, the conflicting data was the doctors at Parkland versus the doctors at Bethesda Hospital. But in some cases, you don't always get conflicting data. In this case, they had very little data. He says, all data are not equal. Some evidence, physical evidence, is more inherently error-free and hence more reliable than other evidence. The best evidence rules the conclusion, whatever volume of contrary evidence there may be in lower categories. That's such as witness testimony. Now, the best evidence, he claims, was the autopsy report of President John Kennedy, that was the best evidence to solve the entire crime and to correct all the history books that are wrong up to this point. Now, the autopsy report, as far as I'm concerned, was not and is not the best evidence to the Kennedy assassination. First of all, it can't be the best evidence because Dr. Humes wrote one autopsy report November 22, 1963, and he burned it 2 days later in his fireplace and wrote it. He said he burned it because there was too much blood on it, and because he burned it, that is not acceptable once it was destroyed. If no other evidence was played around with, I could accept his clinging up his act, but that wasn't the way it worked. So you're left with a group of people trying to find out how many wounds in the corpse, where the wounds were located and on the body, and were they entry or exit wounds. It's simply down to a matter of that, and anything that illustrates where the wounds were on John Kennedy and whether they entered or exited and how many is the way to solve the crime of who killed the President of the United States. Now, X-rays were taken of John Kennedy's body before the autopsy and photographed 65 pictures of the body. Those were the best evidence because as soon as the autopsy was done, that he said was done twice, the embalmers were in the room. The body was embalmed. It was shipped to the East Room of the White House, and the next day it was buried. As soon as they surgically altered the entire body, according to him, they buried it. So why go to all the trouble? If the body was going to be on exhibit, if other scientists were to see it, that would be the best evidence. But the Warren Commission didn't use the X-rays, and they didn't use the photographs, and therefore they were in error down the line, not because they were misdirected, but because they had evidence they refused to use. They called in an artist to draw a third person where the bullet's wounds were on John Kennedy's body. And years later, when the House Select Committee on Assassinations was formed, they raised them up a few inches and called in another artist and still didn't let the American people measure with a ruler where the bullet holes were. So the second time around and the first time around, the best evidence is still held back. And these people like Robert Blakey and Gerald Ford and members of the Warren Commission and John J. McCloy, the dead and alive ones are a pack of liars because they still don't use it. Next best evidence was the brains of John Kennedy. They were taken, according to Lifton's book, the brain cavity was empty, the brains were gone, the skull was empty. Another part of the book, the brains were taken on a cart down the hall, disguised as a newborn child. Another section, they were hit with an axe down the middle and were in the skull cavity. He can't explain where they were, but one thing we know, from the time John Kennedy died until the present day, the brains have never been examined. But the Warren Commission had from December and January until September to examine them for bullet fragments to see if they were identical to Lee Harvey Oswald's bullets, and didn't ask for the brains. So they had the x-rays, they had the pictures, they had the brains. They didn't ask for them. The clothing of John Connally was sent to the dry cleaner. The Dallas police didn't have it. The FBI didn't have it. When the commission wanted it, it had been destroyed and dry cleaned. That was evidence that the commission could have used. They could have used the x-rays and the pictures. They could have used the coat of John Kennedy and his shirt, which the Warren Commission didn't use, to see if it was consistent with the drawings of where they were dictating to an artist the bullet went. They never asked the owners of Newsweek and Time magazine why they drew a scope or photographed a rifle, allegedly Oswald's, and put the scope out, because a man named Mr. Ryder said a scope was attached in November. When they found out the gun came from Klein's with the scope attached, they reprinted pictures with the scope attached. Why do national magazines like Time and Newsweek take a scope out of a picture, put the scope back in? That is evidence. The Abraham Zapruder films that were rearranged, the pieces of the film that were kept out, that the Warren Commission that published them backwards to make the head go a different direction than where it went, that was evidence the Warren Commission didn't use. They didn't use tape recordings that were, in fact, made. People took notes of the interviews with Lee Harvey Oswald for 48 hours in the Dallas jail. The Dallas police, the FBI, the Secret Service, all must have known where the notes went or who took them, because there was reference to these notes, not the tape recording, but written notes, and they were destroyed. And who ordered the car interior of John Kennedy destroyed? The car would be as good evidence to solve the crime of who killed John Kennedy as John Kennedy's body. As I say, why go to the bother of sewing him up or sneaking brains out or shooting extra holes into him, sitting up and doing all of this, when 1 minute later, after you do all that, you're going to embalm him and bury the guy, and the assassin, the alleged assassin, is going to be killed 24 hours later, a little more than 24 hours later. It doesn't make sense. But who orders the car removed to Michigan and the interior destroyed? How many bullets were in the car interior? How many were in the body? I've heard stories about somebody who was friendly to the Secret Service, and that there were, bullets. Mr. Kellerman of the Secret Service said a flurry of bullets came to us. The Warren Commission could have used the street sign that was removed, where bullet fragments could have been into it. Lifton refers to the street sign, and with cavalier attitude, oh, that was just removed, where there could have been fragments hit by silencers in this crossfire, and the lamppost that was removed. Lee Harvey Oswald's mailbox application that legally would remain 2 years was taken away, destroyed, where the rifle would have been mailed from Klein's. And it goes on and on. The Richard Sprague, the photographer, the computer expert, has had many lectures and documentation of approximately 25,000 feet of film taken at Dealey Plaza the Warren Commission didn't use. And there's the famous pictures of those tramps, suspects taken away in the custody of police, and a gentleman, Mr. Hicks, picking up shells at Dealey Plaza, and all kinds of evidence that was destroyed right and left and not used. The Warren Commission were not innocent babes. Wellesley Liebler was one of the most dangerous attorneys, he and Albert Jenner, of the entire Warren Commission, because they were in charge of the conspiracy part, the real conspiracy that links to the Nazi connections and the space agency and the CIA connections. Albert Jenner was an attorney for General Dynamics and for Henry Crown in Chicago, with his multinational holdings in General Dynamics. And Max Clark in Dallas, the man who befriended Lee and Marina Oswald with his wife, was chief of security at Convair. So Albert Jenner was interviewing Max Clark and didn't have Gallie Clark on the witness stand. So Albert Jenner and Lifton were dangerous people to concealing the conspiracy, and Lifton, working with the space agency, is excusing in his book, and it's very dangerous. He's excusing any doctors of involvement in this trickery while he's saying there was a plot. He's saying it's a deep-level plot, but none of them knew what they were doing. He says if they were doing it, they were doing it in a line of duty. He won't locate where they did it, altering the body, how they could get away with it, who did it, and he is led through a maze of interviews in Washington and California, all over the country, with alleged witnesses. Now, Lifton gave all of his information to the House Select Committee on Assassinations, and they didn't use it at all, and he concludes his book by saying, this demands another investigation. Well, there was a $6 million investigation going on, and he was in Washington giving him all this stuff, and they must have really been laughing very hard at the way he was pursuing this and not using a single person or a piece of evidence as being factual. I really can only speculate on why Macmillan, a major publisher, would take a book with so many probablys or perhaps. Usually book publishers are very cautious, and they don't ask you to buy a book for $16.95 that says so little and has so much confusion in it. I don't know their motive, and only one of the things I would guess was that it does leave you confused, and it doesn't solve the assassination, and that if you're thirsty for a book on the Kennedy assassination, and there hasn't been one around for a long time, and the national media doesn't get many of the books the attention they deserve, such as Harold Weisberg's books on the Kennedy assassination, or Penn Jones' Forgive My Grief, Volumes 1, 2, 3, and 4. There are many good books on the assassination. They don't get the attention. And I don't really know why Macmillan said with Lifton, we'll go ahead with this book and push it and make it a Book of the Month Club and make it a bestseller. Because I can't, knowing the subject so well, I can't believe that any single person would be able to figure out when they're through with the book, what happened. And I'm not sure that Macmillan wants you to figure it out. Maybe this general confusion will saturate people who will say, I'm not going to read another book because I paid $16 for this and I don't know anything about it. I can only speculate on these things because, as I say, I've known Lifton for 15 years. I'm really disgusted that he pushed this. I wish him luck with it if what he wants to do is sell it. Read it critically or don't read it at all. But understand that when you're through, you're not going to get much out of it. Well, I don't think I'll do more next week. We'll get back to other events, but that is the book, Best Evidence, by David Lifton, and this is Mae Bressel in Carmel, California.
World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Bressel. This program originates from Carmel, California.